Welcome to Grasmere. This small village on the valley floor is at the heart of the Lake District National Park. It's a busy place, especially during the holidays. The Lake District is a rugged and mountainous place. Today, people come here to admire the views across the unspoilt landscape and to hike across the fells, the local name for these hills that surround you. This heritage trail will take you some distance away from the town of Grasmere, to another place and another time. In the past, people have come here to admire the views, this we know, but they've also come to Grasmere from far afield to take their fill of the landscape in other ways. The fells are formed of rocks forced towards the sky by unimaginable pressures beneath the Earth's surface. At the end of the Ice Age, over 10,000 years ago, valleys were gouged out by the weight of immense travelling ice sheets and freezing rivers that began to melt as the earth warmed up again. Harder materials left behind by the ice now form the fells. These same geological pressures provided the building stones and slates that you can see all around you. The fells contain a number of minerals: copper, iron, silver, and lead. While these can be hard to get at, they can be very valuable. Throughout history, mining these minerals has been a profitable venture, nearly worth its weight in gold. This trail will take you high up onto the fells to the site of the remains of one of the Lake District mines, Greenhead Gill. It's the site of a one-time lead mine that was first opened during the reign of Queen Elizabeth I. It's a scheduled monument, which means that it's recognised to be nationally important and it's illegal to damage it. Once we've made the ascent to the site, there are a wealth of stories to uncover amongst the faint remains of the Elizabethan mine workings. We follow the route from this car park up to a point overlooking the Thirlmere Aqueduct, at which you'll need to play the next audio track for this trail. This next stop is about 2 kilometres away, and it'll probably take you about 40 minutes to get there. Make sure you've got a map, suitable clothing and footwear before heading off. There's some rough ground underfoot and the weather can change quickly. Please take a break and catch your breath. Much of the hard climb is done now. The climb up alongside Greenhead Gill is quite steep, as you no doubt realise. We've left Grasmere behind, and even the higher farms are some way off. We're now in the fells that Dorothy Wordsworth describes, in their own shape and colour, not man's hills, but all for themselves, the sky and the clouds, and a few wild creatures. Dorothy saw a clear separation between the world of men below and the natural landscape above. But it's not so simple. Evidence of the lasting impact of people on this landscape is everywhere. It's just well hidden. One example, below you crossing the Beck, is the Thirlmere Aqueduct, clearly visible as a bridge over the Gill. This has supplied water to Manchester since the late 1800s. As the aqueduct was being built, this would have been a very different scene. Men and working animals will have taken some time to blast and shovel their way into the hill. The hillside around the aqueduct bridge was scooped out for stone to build it. An old quarry marked on early maps shown just downstream from the bridge is now very difficult to trace. This may have supplied some of the stone for the bridge or for the aqueduct tunnel. All traces of the quarry buildings, once lining both sides of Greenhead Gill, have gone. There are some other hidden signs, though. Somewhere to the right of the aqueduct bridge on the far side of the Gill is a small Victorian trial mine blasted by gunpowder. It's only 1.5 metres across, so you probably won't see it from here, but it reaches up to 15 metres deep into the hillside. So this landscape is not entirely natural. A picture of our relationship with the land can be seen through time, if you know where to look and what to look for. We follow the route now up to the start of the Greenhead Gill mine. Once there, you'll need to play the next audio track for this trail. The next stop is about 700 metres further along the track, and it should take about 20 minutes to reach. Take a moment to enjoy the spectacular view. Looking back, Grasmere is now a distant memory. You can compare the height of where you've climbed to against the Langdale Fells, which you can see by looking downstream, away to the west, clouds and mist willing. Around 6,000 years ago, our prehistoric ancestors made the journey high up onto those fells to obtain a volcanic stone known as tuff. This was quarried from outcrops using fire setting and was shaped and polished into stone axes. These axes have been found widely in Yorkshire, Scotland, Ireland and southern Britain and could have been used to make clearings in woodland. The landscape Dorothy Wordsworth thought was wild was being stripped of trees for farming and timber almost as soon as people began to follow the herds up here amongst the melting ice. During the earliest few thousand years, it was probably much easier to navigate along the rivers in boats or canoes and walk up across the fells above the tree line where the landscape was open. The uplands were almost certainly of great importance to these prehistoric people. We can now fast forward a few thousand years just by turning around to face the other way upstream. Looking up Greenhead Gill to the north, you're now looking at the Elizabethan lead mine, which dates to around 1570. The site looks very different now, and only a small proportion of it survives. Over 450 years ago, back in the late 1560s, this was a busy lead mine, if only for a few short years. You might imagine that this valley was bursting with activity. Various pumps drained water from out of the mines that lined the gill. Men and boys strained turning the wheels which powered the pumps. Rocks were hauled from out of the mine shafts in buckets called kibbles. Wheelbarrows heaped full will have rattled about dangerously on their wooden rollers as they made their way to the mill. The stamp mill crushed the raw rocky ore to break it down to a fine powder for smelting. Within 10 years of Queen Elizabeth I's coronation in 1568, she'd overseen the incorporation of a Company of Mines Royal. This had a fairly open mining remit in the northwestern English counties. The skills and experience needed were just not present in this country. One of the company's shareholders, the Augsburg firm of Haug, Langneuer and Company, helped to secure the German engineers and miners that were needed. The company's history is quite colourful. Although described as wise men, true-dealing men and artificial men, the Germans were not trusted by most of their English partners. Espionage, negligence, incompetence and even murder frustrated the company from the start. One of the German miners, Leonard Stultz, was beaten to death in Keswick by a mob for reasons unknown. This prompted Daniel Hechstetter, one of the mine's managers from Augsburg, to move his entire workforce to the safety of Derwent Isle on Derwent Water. Johannes Lohner, a mine manager, was so frustrated with it all that he felt it necessary to give the Lord Chancellor, William Cecil, one of the most powerful men in England, a stern ticking off. We're now going to follow the route up past some of the archaeological and landscape features that mark what remains of Greenhead Gill Mine, to the stamp mill at its heart. Once there, you'll need to play the next audio track for this trail. The next and last stop is only about 60 metres to the north, 1 minute's walk away. Let's take a look at some parts of this Elizabethan mine. On the far western side of the beck, closest to where you're standing, you can see where the mine shafts have collapsed, taking the hillside with it. There are surface works here and two shafts, one of which is now filled with water. Back around 1570, the stamp mill was here, roughly where you're standing now, with a workforce mining and processing the lead ore at various points around the site. We know from an inventory drawn up at the time that the mill was built of stone and very good timber. 63 felled oaks and 60 thick planks were hauled up here for the carpenter, Wolfgang Hochsalzer, to begin building the mill in 1569. We also know that this mill was powered by a large water wheel with an axle tree at the centre. This stamp mill would have been the pounding heart of the site. Water from the hillside was brought to the mill down a channel called a leat. This turned the water wheel which powered iron and steel stamps, which crushed the rock under a steady supply of water to soften and clean the raw ores. Screens, troughs and pits, probably located on the south side of the mill, were used to sort and crush the ores into smaller pieces. Fine particles collected in timber troughs or puddles from the water which flowed out of the stamp mill. We presume that the ores would have made their way to Grasmere on packhorse once crushed. They would have gone on to one of the company smelters, probably in Keswick. The noise of the stamp mill will have been quite phenomenal in this secluded valley. It's said that some of the large stamp mills used during the Californian Gold Rush were like a stampede of galloping horses, which could be heard for over 20 miles. You might imagine how difficult it was for the clerk, Stefan Nussbaumer, to concentrate as he tried to do his accounts in the office. There's a small square dry stone building near where you're standing. The walls are about a metre high. This could be the remains of an early ore store, which would have been loaded from above. It may have been built because so much ore was being recovered that they needed somewhere to store it. The remains of a thick dry stone wall to the south of you are probably all that remains of the wet stamp mill. This may be where the water wheel was that powered the stamp machinery inside. Other smaller walls arranged around this have reused the earlier wall to make a minor shelter or bothy. The bothy dates from when the site was reused between 1870 and 1874, when the Elizabethan workings were extended. Although it's very difficult to make out on the ground, there are hints of another square building, possibly the building known from the documents as the Little House at the Stamps. You might just be able to make out the mill leat, the channel that fed the wheel coming down the hillside from the south as you look down the east side of the valley. It follows a straight line diagonal to the beck. Although the miners were only here for a few years, they've certainly left their mark on this valley. About 100 of the Germans working in the Lake District chose to settle and stay in England. Before 1567, there'd been 16 marriages to local girls, and by 1600, this was more like 60. The children of mine manager Daniel Hextetter from Augsburg certainly married into some of the most notable northern families. Surnames like Pepper, Hindmarsh and Stanger reflect their contribution to the mix. Take a moment to enjoy the spectacular view. Looking back, Grasmere is now a distant memory. You can compare the height of where you've climbed to against the Langdale Fells, which you can see by looking downstream, away to the west, clouds and mist willing. Around 6,000 years ago, our prehistoric ancestors made the journey high up onto those fells to obtain a volcanic stone known as tuff. This was quarried from outcrops using fire setting and was shaped and polished into stone axes. These axes have been found widely in Yorkshire, Scotland, Ireland and southern Britain and could have been used to make clearings in woodland. The landscape Dorothy Wordsworth thought was wild was being stripped of trees for farming and timber almost as soon as people began to follow the herds up here amongst the melting ice. During the earliest few thousand years, it was probably much easier to navigate along the rivers in boats or canoes and walk up across the fells above the tree line where the landscape was open. The uplands were almost certainly of great importance to these prehistoric people. We can now fast forward a few thousand years just by turning around to face the other way, upstream. Looking up Greenhead Gill to the north, you're now looking at the Elizabethan lead mine, which dates to around 1570. The site looks very different now, and only a small proportion of it survives. Over 450 years ago, back in the late 1560s, this was a busy lead mine, if only for a few short years. You might imagine that this valley was bursting with activity. Various pumps drained water from out of the mines that lined the gill. Men and boys strained turning the wheels which powered the pumps. Rocks were hauled from out of the mine shafts in buckets called kibbles. Wheelbarrows heaped full will have rattled about dangerously on their wooden rollers as they made their way to the mill. The stamp mill crushed the raw, rocky ore to break it down to a fine powder for smelting. Within 10 years of Queen Elizabeth I's coronation in 1568, she'd overseen the incorporation of a Company of Mines Royal. This had a fairly open mining remit in the northwestern English counties. The skills and experience needed were just not present in this country. One of the company's shareholders, the Augsburg firm of Haug, Langneuer and Company, helped to secure the German engineers and miners that were needed. The company's history is quite colourful. Although described as wise men, true dealing men and artificial men, the Germans were not trusted by most of their English partners. Espionage, negligence, incompetence and even murder frustrated the company from the start. One of the German miners, Leonard Stoltz, was beaten to death in Keswick by a mob for reasons unknown. This prompted Daniel Hechstetter, one of the mine's managers from Augsburg, to move his entire workforce to the safety of Derwent Isle on Derwent Water. Johannes Lohner, a mine manager, was so frustrated with it all that he felt it necessary to give the Lord Chancellor, William Cecil, one of the most powerful men in England, a stern ticking off. We're now going to follow the route up past some of the archaeological and landscape features that mark what remains of Greenhead Gill Mine, to the stamp mill at its heart. Once there, you'll need to play the next audio track for this trail. The next and last stop is only about 60 metres to the north, 1 minute's walk away. Thank you for joining us on this trail. I hope that you've enjoyed the walk and finding out a little bit more about the history of the Lake District. This important archaeological site is now protected as a scheduled monument. It was surveyed in 2013 by Windermere Reflections volunteers, working alongside archaeologists from the National Trust, the Lake District National Park Authority, and Oxford Archaeology North, as part of the Heritage Lottery-funded Windermere Reflections project. You can find out more about the site by visiting the Lake District National Park website at www.lakedistrict.gov.uk and www.windermere-reflections.org.uk.